Chapter 4. The Unacceptable Consequence of Trust.
"Ye understand what you're asking of me, do ye?" King Brunner said to the two drow priestesses sitting across the table from him. "Ye saw the looks on the faces of me boys when ye walked up from the low gate."
The drow who had introduced herself as High Priestess Minolin Fay Beenry leaned forward and replied. Those looks were no less suspicious and angry than those Matron Mother Quenthel Beenry encountered on our journey back to Menzo Berenzon, I assure you, good King Brunner. I hope you appreciate the courage of the Matron Mother and of Priestess Ivanel. Their action on the field of battle was a high sacrilege against Lady Lolf, and the Spider Queen is not a merciful goddess. Brunner looked around at his advisors, Regis and Denola Topolino of Bleeding Vines, his queens, Malabritches and Tannabritches Battlehammer, his three captains of the newly established Grimguard, Ivan Bouldershoulder, Athragate, and Thibeldorf Puent, and his adopted daughter, Catty Bree. He let his look linger on Catty Bree, for he had been both surprised and saddened when she had come to the meeting late, without Trizd by her side. He meant to speak with her about that, certainly.
"Your own, their own fealty and devotion to the cursed spider face is in me concern," he said rather harshly and purposely rudely.
Neither drow blinked at that, nor seemed put off at all, which pleased Brunner. "The consequences of their actions will reach back to Gontalgrim, of course," said the other drow, First Priestess Sarabel Zorlaren Doerden. "Of course you see that. Are we to be partners in trade or enemies?"
"Got to be one or the other, eh?"
"If our side wins, we hope for the former," Sarabel continued. "If Matrons Mez Barris Armco and Jindia Milan prevail, you can be certain that it will be the latter. Perhaps far in the future, but without doubt at some point, they will march on Gontalgrim again."
"Wins what?" Brunner asked. "Been hearing about your intended civil war for 2 years. Ain't heard a thing about drow blood in the streets of Menzo Berenzon, though."
"There have been many skirmishes, King Brunner," said Sarabel.
"There are always small fights in your town, so I've been told. Your skirmishes tell me nothing new."
"Are you so eager to have the smell of spilled drow blood wafting up the corridors to fill your long and crooked nose, Dwarf King?" Minolin Fay Beenry said, eliciting a chorus of gasps from Brunner's side of the table. Not from Brunner, though. Not even a scowl from Brunner. Just a knowing, sly grin. He looked at Catty Bree, whose face was a mask of surprise at least, perhaps even angry shock, but instead of matching it, Brunner diffused it all with a sudden and boisterous laugh.
"This one's got spunk," he told his daughter.
He turned back to Minolin Fay.
"Need make a good dwarf elf."
"We need the weapons and the armor," Minolin Fay replied. "Armaments forged in Gontalgrim would secure House Beenry, as Matron Mother Quenthel leads us to a better future, for us and for you."
"It's been 2 years," Brunner reiterated.
"The houses have not all aligned," Sarabel explained. "Will it be House Beenry and House Dewerden against Houses Malarn and, quite likely, Barris and Delarmco? Will the other major houses side with Beenry and so break the will of our enemies, or will they side with our foes and leave things uncertain?" "It is difficult, King Brunner," Minolin Fay added, her voice calmer now. "We are asking our kin to repudiate all that they have learned throughout their lives, to repudiate the Church of Lolf itself, to accept as allies the other peoples of Toril we have known only as enemies beyond the memories of the longest living drow. This is no easy thing, and the courage of Matron Mother Quenthel and Ivanel cannot be understated. They crossed a line that cannot be backtracked. Outside your halls, in the sunlight of the forest, they enacted the greatest of all heresies. It is forbidden without exception to reverse the curse of the fallen spider, to revert a drider to her drow form."
"I know, and I'm not for understating that," Brunner answered. "But you're asking me to fire up me forges and put me smithies to work to make a pile of mail and weapons that might come marching back against us."
"They won't," Sarabel said. With your help, we will start the war, and with your help, we'll end it. We have 800 former Driders, large and strong drow from another era.
From an era when they hated dwarfs, Bruna reminded her.
Better than any, they know the truth of Lolth, and that truth is a lie, always a lie, Sarabel continued. They will sooner die opposing her than live in comfort worshipping her. To a one. Wearing the mail from the great forge of Gonthogrim, carrying the weapons forged in primordial fire, and with both arms and armor enchanted in the Underdark by great Beenri priestesses and great Zorlaran wizards, they will shake the walls of Menzo Berenzon's cavern and bring the other houses to the side of Beenri and to the side of truth, the enmity of Lolth. It was a pretty speech, and an even prettier vision of the future, Brunner had to admit. He leaned back in his chair and put his red-bearded chin in his palm, studying the two drow visitors.
Aye, and then when you're done with your rivals, might that you'll march to get back that which ye paid for them armaments and more, eh?
The sour Athragate chimed in, drawing all eyes his way.
I've been a friend of Jarlaxle for a long time. I'm knowing the ways of the drow.
You have witnesses to the events on the field, Manolan Fay protested. They saw the enchanted web. They saw the heresy to Lolth.
You,
she said, pointing to Thibbledorf Puent. I am told you were there, were you not?
Aye,
Puent replied.
Course, Athragate boomed, and it proves nothing.
How can you say that? Manolan Fay countered. Before the action of the Matron Mother and Ivanel, Gontalgrim was doomed, and you know it.
You might take care with your words there, drow lady.
Queen Malabriches interrupted. Do you doubt it? Manolan Fay asked, not backing down. Had we joined with Matron Jindia and her demon army and with 800 huge Driders still in her ranks, do you really believe that Gontogrim would have remained in the control of King Brunner and his clan? You were pinned above and below with nowhere to run. Your magnificent portals were not fired then. And they wouldn't have been in time, and would not have been at all had not a drow, Gromf Beenri, realized the gravity of that which was happening here and himself taken a great risk. She turned back to Brunner. You know this, surely. King Brunner is a veteran general.
One what's gotten out of tougher spots than that, Athragate insisted.
Bluster as you will, said the drow. Behind your voice you know that I speak truly. Gontogrim was doomed except that Matron Mother Quenthel chose a different path.
Even if you're speaking true. I've seen enough of Menzo Berenzon to know that some things don't last, Brunner remarked. Aye,
Athrogate agreed, hopping up from his seat and thumping his palms down flat on the table so that he could lean forward toward the two drow priestesses.
So what's to say that you didn't play the clever ones, eh? You play your tricks out there in Matron Quenthel.
Matron Mother, Sarabel corrected, and Athragate snorted.
And she gets rid of that crazy Malarney witch.
Aye, I know all about that one.
Heard about me friend's visit to her, that should have put her away then and there and forevermore, excepting that your Lolth don't much like to lose. So ye get rid of her, and ye put the second house, Armgo or whate'er, in its place, and now ye come marching back all together and put our own works against us.
There could be no better opportunity to take Gontalgrim
than that we found when we came to your lower gate, Manolan Fay argued.
"'Tweren't Lolth,"
Thibbledorf Puent unexpectedly interrupted. All looked at him curiously, Brunner most of all. Athrogate's words here had been prearranged, of course, by Brunner, who had tasked him with challenging the emissaries hard and long. Puent didn't have a role, least of all at this critical moment. And while it annoyed the king for his plan to be disrupted, he was curious about what Puent had to say.
I watched it, Puent said solemnly. I watched them eight-legged abominations rushing through for all their lives. Aye, even if it cost them their lives, they didn't care. They had a chance of freedom and they leaped in with both their 8 feet.
And Twent loved me, king,
he told Brunner, shaking his hairy head.
I felt it when I threw myself through that web. "'Tweren't evil. Tweren't Lolth.'
Athragate, clearly flummoxed, looked to Brunner for some direction here.
"'She is a deceiver,' the dwarf king reminded Thibbledorf Puent.
Puent considered it,
but shook his head, unconvinced, and muttered,
"'Twarn't loth,'
under his breath. "'Your general describes a remarkable and intricate scheme,' Manolan Fay said to Bruner, "'when a straightforward attack on Gontalgrim would have secured the prize.'
"'Ain't that the way of the drow, then?'
Bruner asked. Manolan Fay leaned back in her seat, as did Sarabel, the two exchanging grim looks. "'Do we have your answer, then?' Manolan Fay asked.
"'No,' Bruner replied. "'You have me word that me and mine'll talk of it, and get ye an answer. "'You're asking a lot, priestess.'
"'There is a lot at stake,' Manolan Fay came back. "'More for us than for you.'
"'Not sure of that, and that's me problem.'
Bruner nodded toward the room's double doors, and the sentries stationed there opened them wide. The drow priestesses rose and bowed, then went out with their dwarf escorts. As soon as the doors were closed, the chatter began, a great argument between Pwent and Atherogate, with Ivan Boldershoulder trying to play intermediary. Fist and Fury sat and whispered together, the sisters shaking their heads with every word, as if they were too confused by it all to agree with anyone. Even Regis and Donala came down on opposite sides, with Regis advising them to throw in with House Bayenry, to fight for a future of the Northern Sword Coast that meant something more for all the folk, and Donala, who had spent most of her life in a guild of thieves and assassins in a faraway land, shaking her head in strong disagreement with his every word, and interrupting him with countering arguments whenever he paused to draw breath. Above the din, Bruner looked to Catti Bree.
"'He couldn't even be bothered to come to this,' he said.
"'He's with Bree.'
"'Don't ye go there,' Bruner scolded her. "'I'm dealing with his people here, and his voice be worth hearing.'
"'What would ye have me tell ye then, da?' the woman said, reverting to her dwarven brogue, because her words always carried more weight with him when spoken in that dialect, Bruner suspected. "'Might that it's Bree. Might that it's his meeting with the Spider Queen in the tunnel in Damara.' Might that it's his time with Grandmaster Kane. Might be his time spread out across the lands, not dead, but I not alive. He's not the same man, da. He's seeing things in ways I've not witnessed.
Bruner had heard it all before, and he too had seen this change in Drizzt. It wasn't a melancholy, but more a passivity, and that in a time when Bruner most needed the ranger in a fighting spirit. He looked at Catti Bree sharply, but forced away his sneer, not ready to have this fight at this time.
"'When's Jarlaxle back?' Bruner asked.
"'He was in the east with Dabney, is all I'm knowing,' Catti Bree replied. "'Might be back already.' Bruner huffed, then slammed his hands on the sturdy table, commanding attention.
"'I'm off to eat, and to fill me beard with the foam of a shaken gutbuster.' You're all here and staying and fighting it out, and when I come back, I'll be hearing one voice.
We've got a chance to change the world, Regis said. And I've got the task of telling more of my people that we're going to bury their sisters and brothers and parents and children, Donala countered. When have we known the drow to keep a treaty or keep any peace?
Regis sat back and didn't reply.
Bah! Bruner boomed. One voice! And he stormed out of the room. "'But it'll be the voice of the last one standing, I'm guessing,'
Atherogate muttered.
"'You should get Drizzt,'
Queen Tannebridge's told Catti Bree.
"'Aye,' her sister agreed. "'He should be here.'
Catti Bree wasn't so sure of that. Not now.
"'You didn't speak your mind,' Bruner said to Catti Bree when she entered the small room where he sat with a beer. His helm, the crown of Gontalgrim, battered and with one horn broken away, rested on the table beside his drink. Catti Bree sat down across from him.
"'Pull me one, eh?'
she said when he didn't move. With a laugh, Bruner lifted his shield, called upon the magic, and pulled out a perfect glass of golden beer, two-thirds liquid and capped with a perfect head of foam. Catti Bree scooped it up, drained half of it, and forced a burp, to make a dwarf da proud.
"'That loose in your lips?' Bruner asked.
"'If I had something to say, I'd have said it in there.
"'Ask your god or something.
"'She's no dwarf god, probably not even fond of dwarf gods, or them that follow them.
"'Bah! She bring me back, eh?
To join in the fight to save Drizzt from Loth, Catti Breeze said. Now we got others going to war on Loth, so it seems.
So you're thinking I should help him?
So I'm thinking, so it seems, Catti Breeze repeated.
So ye don't trust him?
Catti Breeze finished the beer and motioned for another.
Strange, me da, but I do. I seen enough of Jarlaxle and Zachnafane and Braylon Jonkay and Beniago, even a Grump Vanry, to tell me that there's good reason to think even Ellen Quenthel mean what they say, and that it's not all a ruse to kill us with our own weapons. Many in that city loathe Loth, so to speak.
Could have fooled me, given the three wars that come fast to me thoughts.
Catti Breeze nodded and scooped up the second beer.
Where are they to go, da?
Loth's got the matrons. The matrons have got the nobles. The nobles have got all others. Ye speak against Loth and the City of Spiders, ye die. Or worse, eh?
Driders, Brunner muttered.
Drizzt wasn't the only one, da, she said. He was just the only one brave enough, or stupid enough, or angry enough, or whatever it was enough, to walk out into the Underdark and somehow survive to find another life and way. Ye know this. You're trading with Luskin, and Luskin is breaking the airs.
This is different, Brunner said.
It is, Catti Breeze agreed. And that's why I didn't speak me mind, because I'm not really knowing me mind.
Well then, Brunner decided, and he slammed his palms down on the table and stood up quickly, the chair sliding out behind him.
And now ye know your own? Catti Breeze asked.
Nope.
Then what?
Might that I'll cut the baby in half, he said with a wink.
He called to the guards and told them to fetch the drow priestesses, then finished his beer with a great swallow, gathered up his distinctive crown and wonderful buckler, and led his daughter back to the throne room. A bedraggled and thoroughly frustrated Catti Breeze entered her chambers much later to find her husband dancing with their little girl. Or maybe they were training. Drizzt did a broad jump. Breeze hopped, both feet off the ground. She touched down lightly and sprang again, and a third time, which put her up beside her father.
You, Drizzt said.
Breeze laughed. She jumped up as high as she could and turned in midair. She got about a quarter of the way around before she ran out of air beneath her, thumping down and holding her balance. Drizzt leaped up gracefully and spun about, a full spin, landing and dropping into a squat that put his face right before that of his giggling daughter.
You, she said.
Up sprang Drizzt, executing a backflip that landed him on his feet, but only momentarily, as he plopped down on his butt before Breeze with a surprised look on his face. Breeze laughed and went up as if to jump, but didn't leave the ground at all, and instead just fell back to a sitting position facing her father. The two broke out in laughter.
Boom, said Drizzt. Boo-boo, said Breeze.
Catti Breeze rushed over and slid on the floor to stop beside the two, bringing a squeal of happiness and a big hug from Breeze and a warm smile from this man she loved.
You're up so late, she said to Breeze. Up and playing with Da.
She smirked at Drizzt as she said that.
She had a fine supper, Drizzt said. She wanted to stay awake to get a kiss and a story from her mum.
Come then, my little love,
Catti Breeze whispered to the girl. She pulled herself up to her feet, one arm wrapped around her daughter, and carried the child into a circular side chamber they had set up as Breeze's bedroom, complete with brilliantly carved reliefs of war pig guards running about the base of the wall, some on four legs, some on two, some dancing, most laughing. Drizzt nodded as he watched them go, then crossed the floor to what remained of his own dinner, growing cold on the table. For all of Catti Breeze's love in that encounter, he hadn't missed the indications that she was mentally and physically drained. Brunner was leaning on her. Of course he was, and the tension swirling about Mithril Hall couldn't be denied. They had averted disaster, but very possibly only for the present. Perhaps he should have gone to the meeting with the representatives from House Bayenry, as Brunner had asked and Catti Breeze had begged. To him, though, it had seemed like a continuation of a cycle that could not be broken. What a stunning intellectual paradox transcendence had inflicted upon him. While he recognized and understood the importance of the contentious meetings now being fought out in Brunner's audience hall, he was having a difficult time even feeling that urgency. Transcendence had pushed him to a place where he viewed all of this as temporary, and so had twisted his priorities to such an extent that he had ignored a meeting his friends and his wife had begged him to attend. He knew that he was out of balance, in the same way that he knew that he was hungry, but couldn't quite find the energy to move his fork to lift the food to his mouth with any real purpose. This was a melancholy he had not expected. He was still absently picking at his meal, lost in that conflict of perspective, when Catty Bree exited Bree's room and closed the wooden door behind her. "Are you hungry?" Drizzt asked. "Brunner saw to it before I left him," she answered.
"And what was the decision?"
Catty Bree stopped in her approach, put her hands on her hips, and sighed. "Brunner set the smiths to work. 100 suits of heavy chain, sized for elves, and 200 fine and slender swords."
"Then they convinced him that their war is imminent," Drizzt presumed, but his voice faltered when he noted that Catty Bree was shaking her head.
"He's giving the Bannerys nothing as of now," she said. "But if they convince him, he's promised that what they want will be ready for the journey to Menzo Berenzon. He cut the baby in half, so he decided."
Drizzt considered it for a moment, then nodded. "Delaying," he reasoned. "Perhaps that's his best choice. I hope he holds no illusions of waiting out the drow. They'll play their hand on their own terms and times."
"He knows," Catty Bree assured Drizzt. "He's hoping to find some better answers from some better spies before he arms those who have come against him on 3 occasions."
"Charlaxel?" Drizzt said with a laugh.
"Or Kimoriel, or Gromph. There are possibilities here."
Drizzt considered it and gave a little nod.
"You should have been there," Catty Bree said, her voice growing sharper.
Drizzt shrugged. "I have no insights about Menzo Berenzon that I haven't already shared, and I know little of the priestesses who came as Bayenri's ambassadors."
"You know Ivanel?"
"I know some things about her, but nothing I would trust with the lives of my friends. I find her quite beyond my understanding."
"You know more about Menzo Berenzon than anyone in Gauntlegrim, other than those 2 visiting priestesses. Just the way they looked at you across the table might have provided some hints as to their veracity or the depth of their commitment. That war they're insisting will soon begin was in truth begun by you on the day you walked out of Menzo Berenzon."
She stopped short, and Drizzt realized that she had noted his wince.
"What?"
Catty Bree asked, clearly caught off guard by the reaction.
"Is that it? Do you think this is a bad thing?"
"I think that there will be slaughter unlike anything we can imagine," he answered quietly. "More than 20,000 drow in a holy civil war, armies of demons in support, the whole of the cavern will be painted in gore." Catty Bree's sympathetic expression didn't last, and she gave a little snort.
"Sounds like what we would have faced right here. And baby Bree, too, if Ivanel and Quenthel Bayenri had taken the easier path and joined with Jindia Malarn."
"But we didn't. Do you not care that more than half the city will likely be murdered, or worse?"
"Should I?"
she replied, rather unconvincing in her indifference. "Perhaps not," he sarcastically countered. "They're just drow, after all, unless deserving of their doom." As soon as the words left his mouth, Drizzt wanted them back. Catty Bree glared at him.
"Don't you ever say that to me," Catty Bree quietly replied. "I do not deserve that from you."
"No," he agreed and took a deep breath. "I didn't mean it for you. But that is the common feeling among those who live on the surface and know the drow by reputation alone. And that is what Brunner is working against when he has to decide whether or not to help."
"The drow have attacked him in his home."
"His home? For how long has it been his home?"
"What?"
She lost her voice and just shook her head in obvious shock. What I have seen across centuries, my love, is the judgment of impact without any consideration of the intent, and not just for the drow and by the drow.
Driest?
I am guilty of it as well, he admitted. We all do it foolishly and extrapolate grand truths about our enemies that bring us to places where our disagreements cannot be reconciled.
They also attacked Mithril Hall, Caddybri reminded him.
And Brunner attacked Cusor Lauren, Drizzt countered.
Cusor Lauren, the flustered woman stuttered. Gontalgrim?
So he calls it.
This is the ancient homeland of the Delzoon dwarves.
And probably a place called home by 100 other groups in the 1,000 years before Brunner rediscovered it.
You cannot be serious.
I've never been more serious, Drizzt answered firmly. When I walk among the humans, I am drow, and so many think me evil. And yes, the folk of Menzo Berenzon have done some evil things, and wars between them and the cultures of the surface world are real and plentiful.
And raids that kill families of elves and humans and dwarves? Caddybri said.
Do you think a group of drow would fare any better if they met a superior force of elves or humans or dwarves in a high cavern of the Underdark? Do you think that superior force of elves would stop and ask that drow family their intent or purpose? Now it was Caddybri's turn not to answer. How might the Duergar feel about Brunner and his kin evicting them from Mithril Hall all those years ago? Caddybri heaved a great sigh. Yes, the drow are evil, Drizzt said with a grand flourish. Let us presume that to be the truth.
Let us presume whatever you want without your condescension, Caddybri returned.
Drizzt rubbed his face and silently reminded himself that his actions and tone were wrought from his own frustrations and not anything to do with this generous person standing before him.
Then what of Prisoner's Carnival in Luskin,
where the magistrates torture helpless victims to a death they welcome as an escape from the agony, and all to the cheers of the massive crowds? He asked calmly and seriously.
The magistrates are evil, Caddybri said.
They follow the law, Drizzt argued.
Then the law is wrong.
Yes. And what of the pirates who catch a merchant ship unguarded off the Sword Coast and walk their victims off the planks into the jaws of waiting sharks?
We hunted them together with Dudermont. How many found mercy?
Exactly. We hunted them and put them to the depths, as we should have, because they committed and would continue to commit evil deeds.
Yes.
And most were human. So humans are evil.
What? No.
Of course not, and that is my point, and that is my frustration. Caddybri stared at him hard for a short while before slowly shaking her head in confusion.
Good and evil, Drizzt said.
Or better, kindness and meanness, mercy and brutality. We were brutal to the pirates, but what was our intent?
To stop them from continuing their way of terror and murder.
And that mattered. Don't you see?
Of course I see it.
That mattered, Drizzt said again, because he had to play this out for his own sake.
Determining goodness and evil can't be simply an issue of perception based solely upon the identity of the perpetrator.
A drow, a moon elf, a halfling, a dwarf, a human, or the alliance of the perpetrator's people. The judgment lies in intent. So yes, the drow have done evil. The raid I was taken upon when I was still a young man was evil. But what of the raid that Wolfgar's people waged on 10 towns on that occasion when Brunner captured Wolfgar? How many would have been slaughtered if Wolfgar's Uthgard kin had proven victorious?
I assure you that I've considered that point.
But we, and 10 towns, were living on the ancient land of those tribes, and taking scarce resources as our own.
When Caddybri didn't answer, he continued.
We thought it a great act of mercy that Brunner saved Wolfgar. A boy then, but a man you came to love, a man I came to love. But what of the hundreds of his people dead on the field? What of the dwarves who could have shown such mercy but did not? None of us would have judged Brunner ill if he had chosen differently that day.
but Wulfgar would have become just another notch on his old axe.
I don't know where you're going with this, Caddy Bree admitted, and she didn't seem very happy.
We're never to see peace, none of us, until we come to recognize that a child of a culture that is not our own is as precious as one who is, and I don't know if that will ever be possible. No peace, not for humans or dwarves or halflings or drow or elves.
Caddy Bree cocked her head a bit, and Driz detected a hint of a sly grin.
Or orcs? She asked when he paused to look at her. I do not know, he admitted.
Is this about orcs again?
No, this is about everything. It is about the Ark of Justice and Peace, he replied, his voice heavy. What purpose, I wonder, has the road I have walked and the road I walk now? Or that you would have me walk now, if any steps forward are fleeting, if at the end there can be no peace.
You can't believe that, Caddy Bree said, and she stepped forward and stared at him, her hands going up to his shoulders. She kept staring, and he locked that gaze, the two studying each other and moving back from their ledges. Drizzt was relieved indeed when Caddy Bree gave him a much-needed hug.
I don't know what I believe, because of what I have seen.
He pulled her back to arm's length and stared again into those deep blue eyes that had so fully captured his heart and had never let it go.
I think this is part of what Grandmaster Kane warned me about when he and I spoke of transcendence of the physical body and the physical world. So much of that which motivates us here becomes trite, she whispered to him. He could only shrug.
Caddy Bree stepped back, her expression going distinctly colder.
They would have conquered Gontalgrim if not for the actions of Ivanel and Quenthel Beenry, she said.
Bree was in here. You can well imagine what would have happened to her, particularly if they realized she was the daughter of Driz the Heretic. Is that trite to you?
Of course not.
They would have killed her, or worse. They would have killed all of us, or worse.
Had not even Ellen Quenthel turned on Jindia Milarn, I know, Drizzt interrupted. And maybe that's Brunner's answer.
Caddy Bree looked at him with obvious anticipation.
Maybe that truth makes it worth the risk, Drizzt explained.
And what is Drizzt's answer? When this war starts, if it does, what will Drizzt do?
I don't know, he said without the slightest hesitation. And that is my pain.
I would have thought that you would lead the revolution, Caddy Bree told him, putting her hand on his shoulder.
You and Jarl Axel, with your father by your side, fighting to free your people from the grip of Lolf.
Or is that what scares you most of all?
Drizzt looked up at her curiously, and for a long while the two just held each other's gaze.
Because this isn't about the houses. It is about Lolf. And that's what you believe, what you have believed for many decades, right?
Caddy Bree elaborated.
That these foul deeds are the result of Lolf's influence and machinations, and not the truth of the drow people. And now perhaps that question will be answered, and that answer scares you.
He didn't respond, other than to firm his jaw.
Is it that you've been living among those who would blame you for so long that you fear that there might be more truth than simple ignorance to the source of their hatred?
Caddy Bree was clearly surprised by her own words.
No, Drizzt answered her, but haltingly.
Good, she answered, because you shouldn't.
Doubt is not the source of my melancholy. Not doubt about the people of Menzo Berenzon, at least.
There it is, Lolf. The story Kimuriel and Ivanel told us of the founding and the corruption by the Spider Queen makes sense to me with all that I saw in my decades in Menzo Berenzon before I managed to escape. It makes sense to me when I look at Jarl Axel and what he has accomplished away from the influences of Lolf's corrupting priestesses. Luskan is a better place under Jarl Axel's leadership, a fairer place, and one better for all who live there. And this makes sense to me when I consider Jarl Axel, and when I remember my sister Virna,
whom you killed,
Catti Bree reminded him, and Drizzt grimaced. And Catti Bree grimaced in response. She denied Loth with her last breaths, he said grimly. And he took a deep breath, blew it out, and continued. Even in what I have seen from Gromph Bayenri, did you not tell me that it was Gromph who pulled the lever of the host tower to return the magical energy to control the fire primordial? So you have faith in your people. Then what? She pleaded, grabbing his arms. What is it? You have to talk to me. Drizzt took another necessary deep breath, trying to find the words to explain it all, even to himself. Everything seemed too small to him at that time. And at the same time, too overwhelming. So many of the endless wars and ridiculous prejudices rang to him as trite. Yes, that word was exactly right. And yet, that ran against everything he had striven to accomplish all of his life. It's the road, he said again. And the point of it all. If that road winds into nothing but a circle, he paused. I know in my head that I should have been at the meeting, supporting those who deserve nothing less from me. But I also know that my heart was not in it. I'm not ready to reconcile what I recently learned with that which has carried me through all the steps of my journey to the point before my transcendence. You should have been at the meeting, Catti Bree flatly replied. Because you think you've seen a better future beyond this life doesn't mean that what you've done in this life was without meaning. If you believe that, then you're not the man I married and not the father Bree deserves. Her words hit him like a punch. He even staggered back a step. You know that I'm right, she said sternly, not blinking, not backing down an inch. He knew her. He saw it. Unlike his earlier flippancy, yes, even condescension, Catti Bree had been deadly serious. She had meant every word, and there was no second-guessing that last admonishment. And that's when it rang true to Drizzt, a bell so clear that he could hardly believe he hadn't heard it all along. This was the friend who had traveled alone into the Underdark to rescue him from the dungeons of House Bayenri. These were the friends all around him, the companions of the Hall, who had come back from death itself to support him in his trials, indeed, who had saved him when he kneeled broken, physically and emotionally, atop Kelvin's cairn. He felt the warm blush of shame flush his cheeks. Of course he should have been at that meeting. Catti Bree's stern stare made clear that she wasn't going to let him off the hook here, when she and those they both loved needed him to find clarity. And purpose. Yes, he needed to rediscover his purpose. And not just for those around him, not just for his daughter. For himself. This is why you are so anxious to go see Grandmaster Cain, Catti Bree stated, not asked. She paused for a long while, staring into Drizzt's lavender eyes. Yes, he thought, for Cain had transcended many times. And yet the old monk's life remained one of earthly purpose. This is why you must go to the monastery, she whispered, and kissed him, then turned and walked for the door. And eat your darn dinner, ye damned pointy-eared stubborn elf, she called from the door, in her best Brunner's daughter voice. Drizzt returned, a much-needed chuckle.